Good morning again, everybody. Why don't you grab a copy of the Bible and open up to the book of Genesis chapter 12. Would you do that? Genesis chapter 12. This is for those of you that are fairly new to the Bible and all that stuff. We have, I'm going to make it easy for you guys. It's like literally on page 9. No, page 8 even. You only have to go 8 pages in. And we have a lot of extra Bibles in the seats in front of you, so feel free to grab one if you didn't bring one with you. No problem. We always love it when people use our Bibles here because we want people to be able to see it for themselves. So thank you for doing that. So Genesis chapter 12 is where we're going to be in just a minute. But first, let me ask you this question, because I think there's a few things in life we can all agree on. Probably only a very few, but there's at least one I think we can agree on. I hate being interrupted. Anybody else feel some of that? Okay, we have a couple of witnesses in the room. That's great. Doesn't it make you crazy when you get interrupted when you're in the middle of something? I mean, no, okay, all right. So you're sitting in the dentist chair and they interrupt you to give you $1 million. No, you're not upset about that interruption, right? You're studying for like the biggest test of your life. No, you're not sad that you get interrupted to go watch your favorite TV show. I'm not talking about those kind of interruptions. I'm talking about dads, the kind of interruptions you have. It's Sunday, you've finally gotten home, you got your beverage of choice, you've got your remote control, you've settled into your favorite chair, and then, in my case, the baby starts crying. And your wife is on duty all the time, and this is one of the very few days that you're home, and you know that it's really on you to go help that baby, and you're like, come on, man. Just need a couple of hours here, right? I hate being interrupted. And as much as I love that child, I'm super annoyed, right? Trying to get over that. Now, why is it that we don't like to be interrupted? I think it's pretty simple. We don't like being interrupted because we get cozy, right? You get settled. You get into something that's familiar, and you don't want all of that good feelings and all that stuff to be disrupted. Believe it or not, we love familiarity. We love routines, as long as that familiarity and those routines lead to what I would call a predictable pleasure. If we know that where we're going is good, we don't mind if we go there 100 million times. We, in fact, like the familiarity and the comfort that comes with that. Now, I have moved a lot in my life. I just moved to this area less than 2 years ago. And one of the hardest things about making a big move, and maybe if you've made a move, you can totally identify with this. I know some of you out there can. The worst part about making a new move is that it takes forever to get stuff done. Why is that? Because you don't know where to look for things, right? You don't know who has the best pizza place in town. You haven't been there long enough. There's 100 different places in the phone book. Well, there used to be things called phone books you would use. Google tells me that there's 100 different pizza places. How do I know which one is the best one? You know, where do I go to get my car fixed? If you grow up in a place and you know who the cheats are and you know who the honest people are, that's an easy question. For us newbies, it's frustrating, right? How do I get somewhere the quickest, most direct route? I'm one of those people. Kind of a little bit like type A when it comes to driving. Like, I don't like taking a path that's 2 miles longer if there's a shortcut that even if you have to like take 14 turns and stop for, I would rather like get there 2 miles shorter than do the roundabout way where everybody's going on their Sunday drive. I want to get there. But when you're new and you're not familiar with the area, right? You're up a creek. You got no hope. You're stuck with the crowd going the nice leisurely way. But here's the cool thing. Once you've been in a place long enough to get familiar with it, to settle into a routine, to know what you're doing and where you're going, I'm telling you, that is an incredible feeling of goodness. Life in that moment for you is good. You know, I've got my favorite pizza place. I've got my favorite mechanic. I've got my favorite shopping place. I've got my favorite park that I like to visit. See, in that moment, life settles into this beautiful, comfortable thing. Because you know the rules, because you figured them out, and you know how to get the things that you think you need and the thing that you want. And so if you're in that spot, you're in that familiar, comfortable, I know this place spot, and then something interrupts the flow of your life, It's very disorienting. It's very upsetting. It's very disturbing. And most of us, tell me if this is true, most of us do whatever we can whenever there's an interruption, whenever there's a disruption in our comfort and our familiarity of life, we try to get back to what's familiar as quick as we possibly can. Am I right? We don't like hanging out in this no man's land of, I don't know what to do and where to go and what the rules are. We try to get back as quickly as we can. It's just natural, okay? It's what humans do. Which is why the passage that I want to read this morning makes absolutely no sense to me. Look at Genesis chapter 12, right at the bottom of page 8. You see a big 12 there. Let's look at this. This is gonna stretch our minds a little bit. It says this: Now the Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you. I'll make your name great so that you will be a blessing." And then he says this: "I will bless those who bless you. Him who dishonors you, I will curse. And in you, Abram," right? One guy. "In you, Abram, all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Now, how's that for an interruption in your life? Do you realize the depth of what God is asking this guy to do here? He's basically asking him to leave behind everything he's ever known that makes him feel comfortable. To make him leave behind everything that feels familiar and then just to launch out into the unknown. He says, "Oh, don't worry. While you're out there in the unknown, I'll show you where to end up. Don't worry about it. Just start driving, start walking, start going. And in the process, I'll get you to someplace good." God is totally interrupting the flow, the pattern, the routine of this man's life. And all he's offering in exchange is an uncertain future. So on this side, there's all this discomfort and leaving everything behind and an awkwardness and I don't know what's going on. He's saying, choose this, Abram. And on the other side, here's how I'm going to make it up to you. I'm going to give you a promise that I don't feel any obligation to fulfill today or tomorrow or the next day or the next day. A promise that someday in the future, I'm going to make it up to you. It's going to be worth it if you trust me enough to come over here where it's uncomfortable, come over here where it's scary, come over here where you're not familiar, you don't know the ground rules, to strike out into the unknown. Don't worry, Abram, over here, I'm going to take care of you, man. But not today, and not tomorrow, and maybe not for a while, but don't worry. If you just live over here in the uncomfortable place long enough, you'll eventually get to the place I want to take you. He's asking Abram to leave behind his familiar, safe life and take a big flying leap off a cliff into what can only be described as unknown darkness. Have you ever had that happen? Has God ever asked that of you? To take a risk, to be uncomfortable for a little bit. See, when I was growing up, I was a church kid. My dad wasn't just a church member. He was a pastor, and then later on, we became missionaries. So, I mean, pretty high up on the scale of spirit. No, I'm just joking. Maybe a high up on the pressure scale, I'll say that. And I made my life work by choosing to be bitter over the fact that I was living somewhere I didn't want to live, feeling pressure I didn't want to feel. And that's the way I made life work, is I surrounded my heart with bitterness and said, I don't have to care about anybody. I don't have to care about anything. I've been wronged. I've been mistreated. So until this gets fixed, I'm just here. And I'm grumpy. That's how I dealt with it. And then one day, God decided to interrupt my very comfortable life of bitterness. He sent this college student to live in my house for about 2 months. He was doing an internship to be a missionary. I told you the story before. Please don't roll your eyes at me. He comes down, spends 2 months in my life, and he's the first person I can remember who looked me in the eyes and actually wanted to know the answers to the questions he was asking me. And he asked me, he dared me almost through that time period to consider the possibility that maybe, just maybe, this God I was bitter against was the God who actually cared about me and loved me. And what happened is I was told by this guy, and as I was thinking about it, if I'm ever going to experience this God that he, my friend Ryan, is telling me about, I'm going to have to leave behind the familiar world of bitterness to come over here into this really uncomfortable world of vulnerability. Being open to the possibility that maybe, just maybe, Toby Locke was actually wrong. Which at that point in my life, when I was 16, 17, was a shock to me, right? You probably can identify with the feeling. It's going to have to leave that behind. I've been making life work like that. And now I have to come over here, leave my bitterness there, and stay here, and just be vulnerable, and just say, God, what are you trying to do? Where are you trying to lead me? God's interrupted my life plenty. How about you? Now, the interruption part I sort of get, because God seems to be a God of interruptions. Like, it's sort of like what he does, right? But the next part of the story is the part that I don't get. It makes no sense to me. Take a look at verse 4, right? So we read verse 1, 2, and 3, which is the Lord speaking to Abram, calling him from the familiar, right, out into the unknown. Just step out, Abraham. Just step out from what you've always known to what you don't know with me, and I'll take care of you. And then I want you to notice the craziest verse in this whole story. I'll just say this, the craziest phrase in this entire story. So Abram went. I'm just going to stop there. I think that's pretty much the craziest thing I've ever heard. It doesn't make any sense to me. Why would Abram do that? I mean, you watch what he does. It's like, verse 4, it says, so Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot, that's his nephew, went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from the city of Haran. And Abram took Sarai, his wife, by the way, very important, if you move, take your wife with you. Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered and the people that they had acquired in Haran, and they set out to go to the land of Canaan. Abram actually does it. He takes the leap off the cliff. He takes all of that beautiful, comfortable, familiar, soothing routines that he had gotten used to for 75 years. And he abandons all of those simply because this God that he doesn't really know says to him, if you go, I'll take care of you. It'll be worth it in the end. But I'm telling you, that is not the way Abram is supposed to respond. I know, because I know how everybody's supposed to respond to everything. I'm joking. Relax. I'm joking. But this is that's not how I would have responded to that. 75 years. I'm entrenched here, man. I know everybody. Everybody knows me. I know all the spots. I know what to do. My life is good. My life is comfortable. And he gives all that up to go on this adventure into the darkness, into the unknown. Well, I'm going to help Abram out because I have a few excuses he could have used for not going. I've got three of them. And these are the ones that pop into my head. And I think Abram should have used these excuses to get out of this, okay? Because this is an uncomfortable thing he has to do. So here, I'm going to share my three excuses for why Abram shouldn't have done what he did. And if you can identify with this, maybe we'll learn something together. So here's the first excuse that he could have made, okay? And if you're following along in your notes, I think there's a blank for you to fill in or something like that. Here's what he could have said to God to justify staying over here in his comfort, in his comfortable, familiar world. Number one, he could have said this. I don't even know you, God. I don't know you. We teach our children pretty early, right? If they're out in the yard and a stranger drives up in a car and says, hey kid, I'm an adult. Hop in the back of the car. I got to take you someplace. What do we teach our kids? I don't know you. Stranger danger, right? Here's the thing. We often forget a very important piece of this story. Can I try to point it out to you? Let's go back and read the pre-story that leads up to God interrupting Abram's story. Look back, chapter 11, so it's the same page, you don't have to go far. Back up to verse 27. And we're going to learn a little bit about Abram's family that is going to make a point that I think hopefully will be relevant to us. Verse 27 of Hebrews, of Genesis 11. You with me? Page 8. Says, now these are the generations of Terah. Okay, here we go. Terah fathered Abram. So Terah is Abram's dad. Terah fathered Abram, Nahor, and Haran. So three boys, right? And Haran had a son named Lot. We've already talked about him. He goes along with Abram later. Then it says, Haran, tragedy, died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of his kindred in Ur the Chaldean. So there's three boys, right? One of them sadly is gone, but his son is still there, Lot. And so now there's Terah, there's Abram, the firstborn apparently, and then there's the nextborn, and then there's the nephew. And then he says this, and Abram and Nahor got married, took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. We've met her before. And the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, she was the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Iscah. Just in case you're curious about how that all played out. Now, verse 30 is important. We'll come back to later. Now, Sarai was barren. She had no child. You should hear, like, you know, in a movie, like when they want you to pay attention, something like there's a scary person around the corner. They have that music, da-da-da-da-da, right? That's what you should hear when you read that verse. There's something coming later in the story that's going to be important. But anyway, keep going. I'm sorry, I got hung up there. Verse 31. So Terah took Abram his son and Lot, the son of Haran, his grandson, Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife. Again, if you're going on a trip, please take your wife. And they went forth together from Ur of the Chaldeans to go into the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. So do you get the picture? Patriarch Terah, his two boys, Abram's nephew, grandson. He says, you know what? This Ur thing's not working out. Let's move to Canaan. And they stop partway in Haran, and they settle there. And when they settle there, now the patriarch passes away. Verse 32, the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now, I just want you to notice something. How many times was God's name mentioned in those verses? Did you see it? I'm doing a dirty preacher trick, and you're like, oh, wait a minute, maybe it's there, and I just didn't notice. No. It's not there. His name doesn't appear. God is not a part of this moving process. Terah never goes to God, where do you want me to go? Haran and Abram and Nahor, all these guys, they don't consult God. They don't have a relationship with God. In fact, we find out later that not only do they not know God, but actually it's a little bit worse. Look at this verse. This is from Joshua chapter 24. Joshua 24 is right after the children of Israel have gotten into the land. It says this, Joshua said to all the people, thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, check this out, from ancient times your fathers lived beyond the river. Namely who? Here's our guy, Terah. He was the father of Abraham and the father of Nahor, and they what? Served other gods. So not only is Abram not like super tight with God, he's actually on another team. Like he's worshiping somebody else. The God of the Bible that steps into his life in just one verse is not a God he knows. It's not a God he's familiar with. It's not a God that he has a relationship with. Here's another way you can say it, because I hear people say this to me all the time. I wasn't brought up that way. I don't know the stories. Don't talk to me about Noah and the ark. I have no idea what you're talking about. I've maybe worshiped the God of secularism, and I don't believe there is any God that should tell me what to do, and I just live my life. Or maybe I worship some other thing, but I don't know this God that you're talking about. So in my mind, if there's no relationship with this God, why would you drop everything that's familiar and run out into the unknown for somebody you don't even know? You know? Do you make major life changes because some stranger tells you to? And yet that's exactly what Abram does. God interrupted Abram's life with, I can only call it a bizarre invitation. Leave behind everything, go off into the unknown. And maybe you've been there, right? Like God has popped into your life. And you weren't looking for it. In fact, you were not interested at all. and something happened. Maybe it's one of those annoying, insistent Christian friends in your workplace that just won't stop bugging you about this Jesus guy. And you're like, I didn't grow up that way. I don't know him. He's a stranger to me. Why in the world would I listen to what he has to say? Or maybe it's not even some external force. Maybe it's some internal desire, this drive inside of you to seek after God, and you don't even explain it. You don't know how to explain it. I've talked to people like this. They're like, I'm like, why did you, you know, after, I don't say this like first thing we meet, but like after a while, I'm like, so why did you come? Like, what drove you here? What is it that brought you? Like, I have no idea. Like, I can't tell you how many times. Seriously, this used to drive me crazy. I'd be like, I was driving by, I saw your sign, and I thought I should come in. Like, nobody does that. Unless there's something inside of you. It's tugging you. It's interrupting you. It's saying, I know on Sunday mornings you normally do this, but today, I want to mess with that. You're going to go here and you're going to hear something you didn't expect to hear, and it's going to start to mess with your life. Maybe it came to you through some kind of a heavy trial or pain that you know you just can't handle anymore, and so you start frantically looking around for help, and this was something that you thought you could reach out to for help. But either way, this moment comes, God interrupts your life, and you could legitimately say, I don't know God. I didn't grow up with this. This isn't the way I was raised. We don't trust easy, do we? Think about the people you know best. How hard is it to trust them? What blows me away about this story is that Abram has no relationship with God. He's actually playing for a different team. And this God he doesn't know pops into his life with a crazy interruption, a crazy invitation. Hey, leave everything behind you ever known and come join me out here in the unknown. And he still does it. But I don't know about you, I struggle with this. It's so easy for me to keep God at arm's length and say, okay, fine, but that's not how I was raised. I'm not familiar with that. I'm not already comfortable with that. I'm not going to disrupt my whole comfortable life for that. I'm sorry, that's just too much. So that's one excuse you could use. I don't even know you, God. So why are you interrupting my life? I don't know you. Another excuse you could use that Abram probably should have used to have a more comfortable life is number two. Hey, I'm too comfortable. I'm too comfortable. Friends, in this story, Abram has a really good thing going on in the city of Haran where he's living. Let me just try to explain what I'm talking about. Verse 32, right, of chapter 11 says this. The days of Terah were 205 years and Terah died in Haran. You say, what a horrible thing to happen. You're absolutely right. The death of a patriarch is a horrible, horrible thing to experience. But it also meant, especially in the ancient world, that the firstborn son, guess what? He's the new patriarch. Now he ascends through the family ranks and he's the one that leads the family. That's the way it used to roll back in the day. And so here's Abram and he's like, my father has died, but he now all of a sudden has been raised to the rights and privileges and responsibilities that his dad used to have, and it looks like he's kind of well off. Look down at verse 5 again of chapter 12, would you? It says, and Abram took his wife and Lot and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people that they had acquired in Haran, and they set out to go to the land of Canaan. That describes a man of wealth, a man of means. He has servants, he has possessions. Remember, nobody has a bank back in those days. So what do? You take your money, you turn it into something that is tangible, and then you take care of it. You turn your money, your retirement savings is your flock of sheep. It's your flock of goats. It's your herd of whatever. That's how you show what money you have. And Abram apparently has flocks, he's got possessions, and he can even bring on some servants to help him with that because he is a man of means. He's head of the family now. He's got rights and privileges, and it seems like he's pretty comfortably settled in this place of Haran. So here's the question. Why would he risk all of that to launch off into a brand new venture? Think about it from Abram's perspective. I'm going to collect all of my stuff from a comfortable place, and we're going to just start going somewhere. There are bandits and robbers out there who would love to free me from some of my bank accounts that are out there grazing on the grass. There's all kinds of problems. There's droughts that can happen. There are famines. I mean, they're going across at least some area that is somewhat desolate, and all kinds of bad things could happen. This risk is huge. It's not a sure thing in the ancient world you're going to make it where you want to go. So I can envision Abram saying to God, look, I'm sorry, buddy. This is a great invitation and all that, but I can't accept. I'm way too comfortable where I am. And then I think about this. Okay, Toby, how many times have you said that to God? I'm sorry, I can't serve in that ministry because I watch football on Thursday nights. Everybody knows that? I can't give up that pleasure that I love that's kind of become an addiction that nobody knows about. I can't give up that pleasure. I just like it too much, right? Or for those of us that are part of God's family, I can't risk talking to my coworker about Jesus. I mean, I've spent a lot of time at this company. I'm liked here. I don't want to risk my reputation as being that wacky Jesus person. See, that's what's normal. It's normal when God comes with a crazy invitation to step out into the unknown. It's normal for us to push back from the table and say, oh, I'm sorry, man. That's a little bit too much. You know why? Because my life is pretty good right here where it is. I know what my predictable pleasure is going to be. I know where the good things in my life are, and I'll fight through the hard parts to get to the good stuff. But I'm here. I'm comfortable. I'll just, thanks. But no thanks, right? I don't need that interruption. And then one last one. One last objection that you could have made, Abram, if you were thinking this through properly, right, is this. I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. I want you to notice something in verse 5. How old is Abram when he sets off on this journey? Verse 4. So Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him, and Abram was what? 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Friends, that's not he got to the end of the journey at 75 so he could finally enjoy some retirement. That's at 75 launching out like a kid. That's crazy. He could have looked at God and said, God, look, I'm not good enough. This may be a wonderful invitation for that 22-year-old over there with nothing to lose, but I'm 75 years old. And I know people lived longer in those days, but I don't care. 75 years in one place, you develop reasons to stay. I'm sorry, man. 75 years, number one, I'm just too old. I'm sorry, I'm too old. 75 is not the time you just go out and start a new business. Unless you're a remarkable person, you just don't normally do that. I think back to when my wife came to me the first time and whispered in my ear, you're gonna have a child. You know what? I was dumb and 27. And I'm like, bring it on. Yeah, let's have a kid. Why not? This is great. I'm ready for this. I'll never forget when she came to me at 37 after 1, 2, 3 kids and said, hey, guess what? It's happening again. Yay! And you have to understand my wife, she is absolutely sincere. She knows the cost and she can't wait to have another baby. She's so excited. And I go, gulp. Okay, sure. We can do this? Like that's the mode. See, just 10 years, it's not like 50 years, but it's 10 years. I'm 37. I've been kicked around a little bit by life for 10 years. I've been sleep deprived and money deprived looking after for this child. I spend more time like this than I spend any other position. I barely read anything normal that doesn't have like a talking train in it. And you know, My brain is mush, you know, I'm like 10 years into this parenting thing, and I'm like, I'm too old for this stuff. I mean, a lot of time has gone by. I'm less eager now to dive back into diaper world and sleep deprivation world and all that wonderful fun stuff, right? Because here's the thing about time. Time is interesting. You don't say time heals all wounds. That's sort of true. But time also tends to reinforce our routines. And the older we are, the scarier change looks to us. Because think about it, you've built up so much. You have so much more to lose at 75 than you do at 22. At 22, you fail, fall on your face, declare bankruptcy, move home, you'll start over, it'll be okay, probably. You're 75, you go out there and lose your entire inheritance, guess what? That's a big problem. So maybe he could have looked at God and said, I'm not good enough, I'm too old. Or maybe he could have said just this, it's impossible. It's impossible. I think the way I put it in the notes is, I can't do this, right? Would you go back to that scary little verse we jumped over, verse 30 of chapter 11? Now Sarai was what? Barren. She had no child. Now, what's the big promise God gave Abram? If you look down in verse 2, very first phrase, I will make you a... He doesn't say this. I will make you an inspiring figure to the world. Right? He says, I'm going to make you a great nation. In other words, you're going to have kids, and your kids are going to have kids, and their kids are going to have kids, and their kids are going to have kids, and soon you won't be able to contain in one football arena all the people who come directly from you that are a part of your bloodline. Abram, I'm going to do something crazy. I'm going to make a great nation out of you. And Abram has a wife who's barren, who has no children. He's 75. We find out later on she's about 10 years younger than him. She's 65. She hasn't had a baby yet. And that probably means there's nothing coming down the pipeline. There's nothing to wait for here. It's over, right? It's done. And I can imagine Abram listening to this thing. You're going to make a great nation of me? Don't you know? Like, don't you know what's going on? That's impossible. You can't make a great nation out of me. I'm flawed. I'm broken. You don't really want me, God. You want somebody else. Did you want my nephew Lot? His wife's not barren. He's got two daughters already. Did you want my brother Nahor? Because he probably has children and all that good stuff. There must be somebody else out there, God. I'm not smart enough. I'm not privileged enough. I'm not patient enough. Whatever it is. But you probably know what your I'm not blank enough is. And it's possible we look at God and we say, God, I can't step out. I can't do this thing. I just can't. It's impossible. It can't happen. And you know what, God? If what you're telling me you're going to do for me is impossible, I'm not going to risk what I do have right here for what someday some crazy miracle might happen here. That's why I don't buy lottery tickets, okay? You know, they say lottery is a tax on people that are bad at math. Right? You don't understand the math, and so you're like, hey, it's worth it. It's only $2. But you have almost no chance of hitting it big in the lottery. And sometimes it seems like that when God comes into your life and interrupts you and says, hey, come join me out here in the scary unknown, and I will do amazing things. You're like, that's a lottery ticket, man. You're crazy. That's like a 1 in a billion chance. It would take a miracle for that to happen. It's easy to push away from the table at that point, right? God comes to you and he says, maybe for you, this crazy thing he's inviting you to do is to forgive somebody who's hurt you. And you say, God, you don't get it. You don't get what they did. You don't get the pain. You don't get the betrayal. You don't understand. I can't do that. It's impossible. It would take a miracle. Or maybe it's God over here saying, you know what? You are really an impatient, angry person, and we need to do something about that. And you say, God, you don't get it. I can't be patient. I've tried. I've tried to fix it. I've tried. Other people have tried to fix it. I can't do this. It's impossible. It would take a miracle. Or maybe God's saying, you know what? Just get over your fear and try something new. And you say, you don't understand, God. I can't overcome my fear. If I could overcome my fear, trust me, I would have done it by now. Fear's no fun. And God's like, hey, leave your father's home. Leave what's familiar. Come join me over here in the unknown. If I were Abram, and God comes to me with this crazy invitation, God probably would have heard from my lips one of these three things. God, okay, that's nice, but I don't even know you, so I can't really step out. Or I would say this, God, I'm just a little too comfortable here. I'm happy, I'm good, I can't step out. Or God, I'm just not good enough, I'm too old, it's impossible. I can't step out. But again, strangely enough, Abram doesn't use any of these perfectly good excuses I came up with. He just does this, verse 4. So Abram went as the Lord had told him. Abram stepped out and took a wild flying leap of faith. He left behind all the comforts of home and family, trading it all for an unverifiable promise given to him by, at that point, an unknown God. He took the risk. He bought the lottery ticket. And I want to know why. Because that's a puzzle for me. Why would you do that? Why would you risk everything for the possibility someday you might get a miracle if you're lucky? And then, as often happens in my strange, contorted brain, I thought of a movie where one of the characters in the movie went on a very similar journey, and it clicked why Abram was willing to do this. So I hope you'll indulge me as I tell you a little story here. So in this movie, there's a character by the name of Thomas Anderson. And this character has everything he needs. He's got a stable job. He's got all the technological gadgets he needs. He's got his own place. He's not living in his parents' basement. He's got this thriving side business that pays him a lot of money under the table. He should be happy. He should be. But under that, he can't ignore this internal sensation that his predictable, comfortable life that he's living just isn't real. It's missing something. He doesn't know what it is, but he knows that this routine he's gotten stuck up in is not satisfying him anymore. So he starts searching to figure out what it is. And in his searching, he finds out about this guy, this shadowy figure who just might have the answers that he's looking for. And so he goes out of his way to set up this clandestine, cryptic meeting with this character. And they come to pick him up, right? Because he can't just go there because then he would know how to get there. So he's basically under an overpass. It's raining, of course. It's nighttime, of course. And he's scared, but he needs to know. And this shadowy figure's people come up in this car and they tell him to get in. And of course, it's one of those black sedans with the tinted windows. And it looks like, okay, I just got taken in by a cult, right? And what they do in the car is they ask him to perform some kind of a test to prove that they can trust him with the information. And it really makes him mad. He's like, wait a minute, I've been looking for you guys. You should be trying to prove that I can trust you. Why should I have to prove to you that you can trust me? And so they're like, look, you do it or you get out and you go back to your old life. And he's like, fine. And they stop the car, he opens the handle, and I'll never forget, this is the part I want to talk to you about. One of the people inside the car reaches over and grabs his arm and says, hey, you need to trust me. And he goes, like any of us would, why? Why should I trust you? And then she says this really significant thing. She points down this long, dark, empty road just outside the car door. And she says, because you've been down there. You know that road. You know exactly where it leads. And I know you don't want to end up there. Sure, this guy, Thomas, can go back to his familiar, comfortable life. But if he does, he's going to miss out on the truth. He's going to miss out on what life was really about. He would never find the secret he's searching for. So Thomas Anderson does exactly what Abram does here in this passage. He decides to trust enough to stay where he is, pay the price, and find out what the truth is. See, because that's the problem with the familiar. Before I was talking about how great familiarity is, how great routine is, and it is in some senses, right? But there's a really bad thing about the familiar. You know what's bad about the familiar? It's small. And after a while, the familiarity starts to wear on you. Because you sense you were made for more than this little repetition of this little routine over and over and over again. You were made for something more than that. And you start to get bored. And you start to get restless. And you start to think that maybe familiarity isn't everything it's cracked up to be. I think Abram took a look at his situation and was realistic. And he's like, look, my wife is childless. She's barren. No matter what comforts I surround myself with here, I'm never going to have a child of my own. Never. That is not within what is happening in my comfortable routine. And this God pops into my world, and he says that if I take this path over here, at the end of the path, there's a miracle waiting for me, and I'm going to have a child who has children, and someday there will be a great nation of people that has come for me. And so I think he looks at his life, and he's like, this actually isn't so great. To be comfortable but have no future. To be comfortable but have no legacy. So I'm going to take a calculated risk. And I'm going to jump off the bridge, so to speak, onto this thing. And I'm going to go out into this crazy unknown. Because, yes, it might be a dead end too. But maybe there's a miracle waiting for me out there in the darkness. And if I'm going to just end up at a dead end here, I might as well try for something that could end up some other way. And so I wonder if he just said to himself, Abram, what do I have to lose here? What do I really have to lose? The familiar is not what it's cut out to be. Maybe this is the chance of a lifetime to embrace a life I was always meant to live. A life where my entire destiny, my entire future is actually changed. Where everything I thought was impossible might actually turn out to be possible. See, in the end, I think, if any of us in this room, like just you and me, not talking about humanity, but you, me, in this room, if any of us have the courage to decide to accept God's crazy invitation to step out, I think the only reason we'll step out for real, instead of just nodding and telling other people we're going to step out, is because we realize that our nice, comfortable, cozy, familiar lives aren't really what they're cracked up to be. That actually these lives leave us worn out and exhausted and bored and disappointed and feeling like we've missed out on what our life is supposed to be about. And so God interrupts us with this crazy, unrealistic, threatening invitation to step out and trust him enough to follow him out into the unknown, because he says, if you just trust me and you take this step, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to make you a great nation. I'm going to make your name great. I'm going to make you a blessing to other people. Abram, somehow, and you can't even comprehend, and I'm not even going to tell you because it would just blow your mind, and then we'd have to spend the rest of your life putting your mind back together. You will actually impact every family in the entire earth. Like, think about that. On Friday, we celebrated the ripple effects of a good man's life. And they're surprisingly wide, weren't they, family? The people impacted. You just kind of go, wow. Can you imagine having the kind of ripple effect that every family in the history of the world knows your name and knows you made an impact on them? That's Abram. So, okay, I'm done. But here's the thing. I don't know what to ask you to do about this. I'm not sure that I have the courage yet to ask you to go ahead and take the big flying leap into the unknown. I feel like there's a few more things from this passage I need to get to next week, if you'll come back. But here's what I do want to ask you to consider. Before you even jump, I'm not saying jump. Don't jump. You're still on the cliff. You're fine. You're still in your familiar place. That's fine. Can you feel God's interrupting knock in your life? There's a verse that I think relates a lot to this from the book of Revelation. This is Jesus talking. He says this, Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and will dine with him and he with me. Well, it's saying something in a roundabout way. The roundabout way is there's people that don't hear. Why don't they hear Jesus knocking? It's not because they're bad people. It's not because they're like, I hate God. No. They don't come to the door because they don't hear the knocking. Why? They're too busy. They're too familiar. They're too stuck in their rut. They're just kind of like going with the flow, man. Not making any waves. Just kind of living life, living the dream, right? And when you're just stuck in your routines, you don't hear the knocking. So here's my question for you. Would you have the courage after we're done here, you go home, maybe you take some time to chew on this. Would you seriously ask yourself, how is God knocking in my life? What interruptions has God brought into my world that may just be an invitation for me to think about God in a different way? And maybe eventually, I don't know if I have the courage yet, I'm kind of scared over here, but maybe eventually to actually take that wild step off the cliff into the darkness with God. Would you just pay attention? Would you just take inventory of your own heart and say, can I hear God's voice? Can I hear his insistent knocking at my door? Because here's the thing, oh man, this is dangerous, okay? Once you start to hear his knocking, you may not be able to get it out of your ears until you do something about it. He does not stop knocking. And he doesn't do it because he hates you. He does it because he wants to call you out of a dangerous, familiar, comfortable, self-destructive life into a scary life where he's gonna meet you out there in the darkness. And then come back next week so I can try to finish this thought, okay? Let's pray. God, thank you so much for this opportunity to get started thinking about just stepping out. Abram has been such a challenge to me personally, God. A man at 75 years old who has so much wealth and comfort. He could have just stayed where he was. I'm even willing to give him some extra excuses to get you off his case. And he didn't use any of those excuses. He just took that step because he knew that the familiar wasn't good enough. It was a dead end. And in the end, he wanted to take a chance for a miracle instead of stay where he knew predictably would end up at nowhere. I pray, God, for every single person here. And I know we are at all different points on this thing called the spiritual journey. Every one of us. Some of us are miles ahead. Some of us are miles behind. Some of us haven't even found the trailhead yet. We're still searching for the entrance to the trail. But either way, God, I believe you are knocking on the door of our hearts and you want to interrupt and challenge us to think about a new kind of life. A life of faith. That is unpredictable, it's unknown, but out in the darkness, you're there. And so is your blessing. And so is a relationship with you that makes life meaningful, significant. I pray, God, you'll give us the courage this week to do nothing more than to take inventory of our own hearts and ask ourselves, where is God knocking? Where is God trying to get my attention? How is he trying to interrupt my world? And if we'll do that, Lord, I think we'll be on the way to stepping out into the future with you. Give us courage to do that. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.